Welcome to Technory Live. We're back in studio at WGN talking with some of Chicago's top entrepreneurs, founders, and innovators. For those of you tuning in for the first time, well, you've probably heard this bit before. What is Technory? Since 2010, Technory has been Chicago's top startup showcase. More than 300 companies have been featured, been on stage, been on the show, and they've gone on to raise a whopping $260+ million in venture funding. My first guest here today is going to be Victory Lap founder and CEO, Brian Barr. I finally got a name, somebody I can pronounce, which is helpful. But I also want to introduce our group here. We've got made famous from the feed is Sean, our producer, Sean. And, of course, welcome back Showbiz Shelley, who was here last week.
Hi, Scott.
Welcome back.
Thank you very much for having me.
So I wanted to get to you and sort of tell people out here that are watching the show or not watching the show that we would like to have this regular segment with you where you can talk to people about what entrepreneurs and celebrities and how they're kind of similar in the events and things and how the entertainment side of this whole thing comes together.
Because I think some people maybe who are watching right now are like, what is Showbiz Shelley doing there? But it's really, you'd be surprised how much these worlds collide all the time, technology and entertainment. So I'm going to a little bit later tell you about exactly how certain celebrities are getting involved in certain things like startups and also give you some events too to go to.
I can't wait. Awesome.
Yeah, should be good.
Well, we are ready to go. Brian, welcome to the, I guess we'll call this the March Madness edition. So if people are a little slower, everyone's kind of watching the games.
Yep.
And
then
Gonzaga's finally pulling away, so we're good.
Yep.
Welcome, and thank you for coming. And I've been excited ever since we had a conversation on the phone. I've been excited about learning more about Victory Lap, because as a person who works in the startup world and has worked in consulting and has worked sort of across the gamut of industries from real estate to tech, sales is an incredibly difficult problem to solve.
Yep. Yeah.
I'm looking at you thinking you came from Groupon. So that is like the sales mecca, at least as far as Chicagoans in tech are concerned.
Yeah.
What was your background to lead you to realize that there's a problem in sales that you thought you could solve?
Yeah, absolutely. And thanks for having me first off, especially for the March Madness edition. This is pretty pretty awesome to be able to literally watch the game right now while I'm talking.
Yeah, for those who can't watch or aren't live streaming,
this is actually phenomenal.
You can actually watch. We're watching the game. So yep. if the show is distracted, it's yep. because there's multiple monitors.
There's pauses. I'm not really thinking. If you think I'm like deep in thought, it's actually wrong. So great to be here. So the problem that I kind of identified in sales that led to Victory Lap being created and founded was the talent acquisition piece. And then the training piece. So I spent my time at Groupon for 4 years and was part of their crazy growth, and which was reliant on entry-level sales talent right out of college, less than 2 years of individuals. And those are the ones who really helped Groupon achieve that hockey stick growth. At the same time, there's a lot of people who didn't succeed there. And I think I just kind of went back to this place around. These are awesome individuals that went to a great school, are probably really, really smart, but something didn't transfer over to the sales role directly. And I just picked up on this whole lack of education and lack of awareness piece. No one was really talking about sales in school. It kind of became this job where you went into it as a default. And anytime you put your toe in the water from a full-time career perspective, you're not going to achieve as much success as if you just dive right in with the confidence
yep.
that you can do it. So it was that problem helping a lot of individuals out of college or early on in their sales careers or careers in general try to transition to the workplace, number one, transition into a sales role, number two, and the challenges that they were facing.
I've literally done consulting for companies as large as Kraft to companies that were startup companies of three or four people. And it's funny to me that they both have the exact same misconception sometimes, or at least the people get hired by those companies. They think, oh, I'm going to Kraft. They're going to have this great piece in place where we're going to be able to, teach me everything there is to know. And I'm going to have this huge database of people to call on. And it's all templates. And I just have to go in and send that email and pay, I have all these resources. And that's never the way it is.
Yeah.
And normally the people that come from past sales experiences, from industry to industry, the sales cycle, everything changes so quickly. The whole ubiquitous salesman thing is really not like appropriate, honestly. And
yeah.
and when you find people who are now in this sort of gig economy and more short term, I feel like sales guys in particular are the ones that have a hard time because they end up coming into a space or into a company. And I feel like I don't know how to describe it other than to say like my, as an example, my dad was in sales for 35 years at one company, essentially. Like, he got to know every one of the people that he would do business with for years. Now, with people going from different industry to different thing, you've got to build new relationships. You've got to learn how to use CRM tools. And it's just, it's, I think it's a huge challenge for companies to find a sales team and bring them on, train them, and keep them.
Yeah, 100%. I always say that your first 6 months on any sales job is going to be tough, to the point of maybe being painful, no matter how experienced you are
sure.
in sales. Just to your point, you got to build up relationships. You got to really focus on building your pipeline, which means just a lot of prospecting, cold calling, whatever you're going to
do. And at the early stage, which you guys are talking a lot about, those guys, a lot of times, those people are commission only, paid a very small base, bonus based. And if you do that, your first 6 to 9 months, I mean, I've told this story before to a buddy of mine who works at Inland, and we were both in commercial real estate. He worked for more than a year, almost 18 months before he got his first check from Inland as a broker and eventually became a broker, but as a salesperson.
Yep.
That to me is, I mean, he's now killing it. But talk about having to put in your time and really learn and grind it out.
100%. And I think if there is, that problem, I think, will always kind of exist to a certain extent. But I think you hit on something around the no one's really staying in their jobs as long anymore, and that is true. And so I think part of that could be solved, though, by just telling people what they're getting themselves into. There's so many different types of sales roles. You mentioned commercial real estate, right? That's a sales role right there.
Oh, yeah.
There's an inside sales role at Groupon. And then the variety of startups that are looking for salespeople, each role is going to be a little bit different. And certain individuals are probably better for that role than others. Doesn't mean they're not good salespeople, but I think there's something there around helping people identify what is the right sales career path for them. And then the sooner you can put them on that, the more successful and the faster they'll be successful as well.
So I guess we'll segue in. What is Victory Lap and how does it sort of at least assist in solving this problem?
Yeah, so Victory Lap's sales education platform that finds, curates entry-level sales talent, then trains them over a two-week boot camp intensive style program, and then puts them in front of a variety of different companies to help them land a sales job. So in a sense, we are taking our past experiences of hiring hundreds of salespeople, using that to find what we think are the really good ones, making them better in a two-week intensive training program, and then kind of advising them on what could be a good next starting point in their career.
So I'm going to ask this question. It's going to be how the response goes is going to be open-ended. This could be fun or not fun. So how does your program, particularly the part of the two-week boot camp, how does it differ from, say, like the Rainmaker seminar things that people will buy? Because, I mean, tons and tons of people end up buying these things thinking like, oh, yeah, I went to Rainmaker, now I'm a killer salesman, and it's just not the case.
Yeah, it's a great question. So I think a few things. One is our curriculum and training is
involves actual training.
It involves training that works. No, I'm kidding. No, it really focuses on sales fundamentals that are transferable across any industry, right? So selling real estate, selling Groupon, selling Victory Lap, there are certain key principles there that can apply to each of those. And we focus on those fundamentals and we go deep into those. And as a result, we give people this confidence that, hey, I can actually do this thing. The second unique differentiator is the fact that we put them on the phones the second week of the program. So we're partnering with a company. They're actually making live sales calls, 100, 150 a day, thanks to this technology, the power dialer, and live coaching is happening during that.
Yep.
So I think that the fact that you learn in a classroom, but then you actually do it and put it to practice.
It's a real training system. It's a real deal, not
coaching.
Just like number one sales guy, book sales guy comes in, sells his book for free.
I hate these emails that I see that just says like, be the best email writer in 30 minutes or close deals faster after doing this. And I'm like, no. Like,
that was the name of my new book I was writing.
I know. It's actually taken. I looked at it. it's just like sales is one of those things that takes time and effort. And it takes really a persistence, not only to close deals, but persistence to get the craft right. And I always say the best sales coach is your customer, right? It's self-awareness. It's your own ability to be coachable, whether it be through your own means or through others. That's going to allow you to be good. We're just giving people a head start. Right, we want to focus on people who want to go into sales, and we have 2 weeks to make them better. Are we going to make these people rock stars? Absolutely not. But are they better for going through this program? I think so.
Yeah. What would you say then are the three? I'll categorize it like this: the pre-sale, pre-pitch, however you want to look at it, the negotiation point of the sale, and the end of the sale, sales closed or dead. Doesn't matter whether they got it or didn't get it. What would be the three main things that you think that is important that everyone who goes through your program learns?
So the pre-pitch?
Pre-pitch, actual like live sale on the line, and then whether you won or didn't win it, whatever, how do you follow up?
Yep. So pre-pitch being like the research you're doing going into that.
Sure.
Into that meeting. And
some salespeople,
so
believe it or not,
yeah,
that doesn't exist.
So that first thing is, you got, what's your reason for reaching out to that individual, and why is it in their best interest, not yours,
yep,
to talk to you, right? You have goals to hit, you have sales to make, we get that, but why should that person spend 10, 15 minutes with you? And if that message isn't crystal clear, then don't pick up the phone. And until you find a message that's going to make it crystal clear.
I can't stress that part enough, honestly. Like, I learned it my own, like myself,
yeah,
the hard way. And I didn't learn it over a year. Like, years went by and
yeah,
I didn't realize this. Like,
yeah,
I went through the same, like, my name's Scott, I work for this company, then I work for this company, then I run my own company, and then I run my own company, and here's what we do. And that was like my pitch every time. And
yeah,
it was just crickets.
Yeah.
I'd get nothing. And finally, this wasn't even that long ago, finally I realized if I flipped it up and said, hi, you know, my name is so-and-so, maybe you've heard of this company, it's this Technori, you know, we do this, but how can we help you do this and this? And if, the minute I flipped it over to like asking the question, like, you know who I am already, what
yeah,
can we do to help you accomplish your goals this year?
Yep.
The sales flow, the amount of companies coming through, the amount of people calling back
yeah,
went through the roof, literally. I mean,
yeah,
triple, maybe more.
I mean, so much of sales is educating and informing, right? There's, especially now, there's so much, there's a lot of information out there from the buyer side, and it's actually making the decision-making process harder for them. So salespeople really need to adjust. And I think if you can just focus on that approach from the get-go, it'll be most helpful. And I think second thing from in your actual meeting, while
yep,
you're having a meeting with your customer, stories, right? Your company's features, your company's quote-unquote benefits, like, they're not going to remember that.
Yeah.
Slash care.
Oh, I got stories.
20 minutes after that. But stories, now we're talking, right? So what I mean by that is, you know, who else is using it and how is that impacting them, right? You know, the social proof aspect.
Yep.
But, you know, how have you proven to be successful in helping someone like them? Keyword there being the help.
Yep.
And that's going to inspire way more confidence in going with possibly you versus someone else. But it's also memorable. And there's more decision makers involved in a lot of deals today, and that's something that they can pass along a lot easier.
That's the most challenging part I find.
Yeah,
is the
internal
number
selling aspects.
And the other thing
challenging
is, and I'm not going to name the company we're working with, but they have outside companies that they're partnered with to do things.
Yep.
And so I'll be dealing with the main sponsorship or main partnership person, and then
mm-hmm,
like, all right, well, I've got to team in and get our media group in, and then I also have to team in and get our person that, like,
yeah,
organizes everything over. I have multiple companies, not even
yeah,
people, departments, companies. So on my email train right now with some of these companies, I have 4 and 5 people from different companies and within the main one that I have to, like, who
yeah,
are you and what is your role? And then when I make my pitch or my conversation with them, I have to touch on each one of those people.
Yep.
Otherwise, they're like, well, this doesn't help me, and
yeah,
now they're not going to advocate for you.
Yeah, it's definitely a huge complexity in there. And that's not, doesn't necessarily transfer over all, you know, everybody's product and service. But I think there's something to be said the way you think about pitching, quote unquote, pitching
yep,
your product. You know, I think you got to look at it from what's actually, you know, happening on the ground with what you're delivering. The second thing, though, I think that's important piece with the sales process is, and you already hit on this, is you really have to listen more than you're talking in that 30-minute meeting.
Yeah,
it's going to be hard to do, especially there's a lot of quote product demos these days.
Yep.
But how are you talking less and listening more? That thing that we've been talking about for a long time with sales shouldn't go away with product demos and all these other things. So you got to listen. Huge proponent there. And then the third thing was what? Closing.
Yep.
Right?
After, let's assume I close this deal, or if I didn't, actually, for the sake of this, let's assume I didn't close this deal.
Yeah, what do I do?
What's the follow-up? What does a good salesman do once a deal is, the negotiation terms, pitch is over, they didn't, maybe will later do a deal?
Yeah.
I feel like, honestly, the most important one is how you react after I say no.
Yeah.
What do you guys teach the salespeople?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think the first thing to identify, you know, kind of know now, know never, right? What's the time frame at which I have to really turn this person around? Is it a week? Is it a month? Is it a year? It depends on
yep,
typically your sales cycle. Right, in education, it's you have a year before they start to purchase again sometimes. So just knowing that should allow you to focus on the intensity of which your follow-up should happen. And I think that's a key point. So not
yep,
only what you're saying, but how much. Because typically salespeople could get hung up on the wrong accounts.
Yeah.
And that time being spent elsewhere is going to be problematic. The second thing is, you know, it sounds simple, but why did that deal not close? like, what was it about? And honestly, getting that feedback from the customer.
I was going to say, do you recommend that they say, like, 100%. Listen, what can I do? What could I have done better to get this deal or get your business?
Hey, Scott, thanks for letting me know. I really appreciate that. To be quite honest with you, I thought this would have been the absolute best fit out there for you, but respect your decision. What would be really helpful for me is if you could let me know what I was missing on my end.
I didn't like your shoes.
Yeah. You know, I had a tough month on sales. So I've been shopping at Payless. So
Payless got good shoes too.
I was hoping up my game a little bit and with this sale, but you know, fair enough. That's
try good. DSW. They have really good stuff.
Great sales too.
DSW does have good sales.
They do have good stuff. Right? So yeah, there you go. So those are my brief intro.
So I'm gonna circle back on two of the points and just sort of like my own experience and love to get your pitch on. So like, do you guys work also? Let's go back to the part of mom in the meeting with you. Do you guys work with them on what are considered good and not so good tactics and things to do from a physical standpoint in a meeting, from a voice, like assertion, from how you position your body and things like that? I mean, growing up, so like, as a backstory for me, which I should be a better salesman than I am. I grew up my entire life traveling with my dad. I mean, from the age of like six, every summer I would leave and go with him on his sales trips. So I sat in these boardrooms and watched these guys my whole life and would pick up traits like looking at their shoes, looking at how they looked at each other when they liked a deal, when they didn't like a deal, and just all kinds of stuff. What do you look for, or what do you teach, I should say, when I'm having a meeting right now with you? What should I be looking for telltale signs that you're interested and engaged or I'm losing you?
Yeah, great question. So just to clarify, we do focus a lot of on the inside stuff because we cater to entry level.
Oh, yeah, that's
most
right.
Most of the jobs are going towards inside sales.
Yep.
However, some of those principles transfer over inside outside, and the concept of mirroring is really important.
Yeah.
And that's really true outside too. So if that person you're selling to has their arms folded, leaning back a little bit, and if you slowly do the same thing and mirror their behaviors, that imitation is going to actually increase the rapport that you're building with that person.
And you could do the same thing. Like,
same
I'm
thing over
thinking
the phone.
Of call. Yeah. So like
pace,
calls,
right?
The pace.
I'm a fast talker, pick it up. I'm a slow talker, slow it down.
Yep.
And I think the second big thing to identify is the active listening piece. What's the engagement of that person? And that's why, you know, that being in person, you can kind of get a feel for that. Are they leaning forward? Are they nodding their head? Are they giving you the,
Are they watching the Northwestern
game? Makes sense. Are they watching the Northwestern game? Or Gonzaga, beat the spread. Thank you. So, you know, those are all things that I think you can pick up on, which you can do it over the phone as well. You know, active listening, there's cues to active listen over the phone, which we talk about. So, you know, it's that read on individuals that is important. And then, you know, we talk about the different personality types as well of individuals and how they like to make decisions, what information they need and what they care about. So
I think the three things that from my end of just experience, and it's great because what you're saying lines up almost exactly on top of the three things that I really not personally struggle with, but struggle with when I deal with other companies that are trying to get in sales and growth mode. The first one, which just blows my mind, if you think about it, it's not all that illogical, but it blows my mind. In the world of Google everything, the lack of research that people do, the amount of phone calls that I get from people asking me whether I want to participate in this or sponsor this or get involved in this, and they have no idea what I do, or in other cases, somebody invited me to participate in a survey, and I'm not even a customer, and it's just like what? And it's not a phone call thing, like that's an actual thing, like the person just makes mistakes. The lack of research is one that just blows my mind, how people don't spend the 2 seconds it takes to go look me up on LinkedIn. And you know, if you go on any of my social media things, you know that I'm a Northwestern guy, you know I like Marquette basketball, you know, like tons of stuff about me that you could cut this in half. The other thing that drives me absolutely nuts is on the back end of the sale, whether it went well or didn't go well, the number of people that don't follow up. If it's like the deal doesn't go through, it's like boop, gone. So you were my best friend 5 minutes ago. I mean, you're talking about go Cats and all this other stuff, and then I tell you that we're not going to do a deal or whatever, and you don't even, just gone. And it's like those two pieces, which I think remind me of a lot of the fact that the people you're talking about too are younger, and this is their first go around. And I just feel like we as millennials and younger really don't communicate outside of apps. Like, we communicate with all of our friends via phones and app. So we're so bad at interpersonal communication skills now that we just go on like, you know, bot mode and go through the sales calls. And I feel like that's the one thing that just, I honestly think if you could train people to fix that sort of bot mode millennial issue, all these people would be could be perfectly fine as sales.
You got to come in and lead a class. That's what needs to happen here.
I'll just be the person who tells you all things I don't like.
I got an hour for you next session.
Let me know. I'm happy to go.
You're spot on. I mean, it just I've been on a couple calls recently as well where you know they're talking to me like I'm a 2,000 person company.
Yep.
And I'm two.
So how do you not?
It's like that's a totally different conversation you should be having with me based off the questions you're asking, based off the knowledge you prepared about your company, et cetera. And there's zero way that deal's going to happen, right?
Yep.
Because nothing of that made me feel good about it, right? Why would I go with that company if they didn't take 5 minutes to just talk more about me? And that I buy you in addition to your product, I think is still very true. So, you know, your product has to be pretty darn good if I'm going to be able to see that red flag and not be able to do something with it. So
I save money on shrinks by just telling salespeople who don't do a very good job about my life.
Yeah.
Like they call me up and they're like, hey, you know, whatever. They don't know anything about me. As soon as I know it, I'm just like,
that's great.
Yeah, I've had a really crappy day. Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. And then I just go on like, here's all the things that I did today.
Yeah,
it's hilarious. Yeah. They eventually hang up and you don't call them back. But, you know, it's like in my mind, it's like the modern version of prank calls.
Well, there are 14.2 last stat, 14.2 million sales professionals, full-time sales jobs, 12.9% of the U.S. workforce, right? And we talk about it at FairTop. We say the world needs more better salespeople, right? And
half them are lawyers.
Yeah, well, that's true. Oh, I haven't done that. That's another thing. But anyways, so that's just it's crazy, but it's so true. Like you know, it's the sales has the game has shifted a little bit, and that's why I think you look at these employers who are having difficulty finding good sales talent because they realize it's a tough job. It's intellectually challenging. It's emotionally challenging. And you need a certain person that. And those skills can actually be developed. They can be taught. We can train people. We can build up the confidence, those skills. But I don't think you can just say, oh, I met with Brian. He seems like a really nice guy. He can sell my product. Like, you can't hire like that anymore.
Yeah.
5 years ago, 10 years ago, you could have.
I thought that too. When I started my first company, I made that mistake. And when I, you know, even taking over Technoria, I started that same approach.
Many times.
You naturally think that you can be like, I can teach you how to do it. It's like, I'm not the guy to teach you how to do it.
Yeah. It's just, so there's a passionate about trying to get more people invested, excited about going into sales and actually tell them what it's about. It's about relationships, about listening, and it's about taking care of that person, what you happen to represent.
Well, you solved my problem because I was about to ask you what's some good advice as an end note on there, and you just nailed it with that. I really do hope people, just so that they don't keep calling me unless they want to hear about my life, I hope they sign up for Victory Lap and actually do some training because I think that you are solving actual issues within these sales groups, whereas I think a lot of the other ones just like rah, 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 and you know, a bunch of Jordan Belforts running around. Like, I need that, like a hole in the head.
Let's get rid of that one.
Yeah, that's not a bit. I think there's a handful of creditors that feel the same way.
Yep.
That's another story. Brian, thank you so much for coming in
taking
time. Where do people go to learn more about Victory Lap?
Sure. VictoryLap.io. Simple as that.
Victory Lap HQ, I think, on Twitter, correct?
Victory Lap HQ on Twitter. Really solid Instagram game going on right now as well. So,
do you have lots of pictures of like bad sales guys, like just totally downtrodden?
No, it's all fun stuff.
Oh, good stuff.
We're really good.
I was going to say,
we're the good sellers.
You should have a picture of like when they come in, the very first call, like, you know, like in Property Brothers or whatever, they show them a house and it's gorgeous and then they take them down. You should have them come in first, go on a call the very second they sign up and then get the picture of them like, Jesus.
Seriously. Well, they're in we're in our second week of class right now. So we're on the phones and first, this one individual in class, she made like 30 dials her first day, just kind of getting her feet wet. First time inside sales, outbound dialing. Today, she made like 156 dials.
Boom.
And just like
awesome.
In 4 days, that confidence to be able to make, you know, what, 5X phone calls is pretty cool to be experiencing. So thanks so much for having me.
Of course. Thank you. This is awesome. Thank you so much for coming in.
Great to be here.
We applaud now.
Oh, yeah. We do applause. We have applause now. Everyone gets applause. Very cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was
great. I thought it was fantastic. I mean, I don't know. Everyone sitting around here maybe has had an experience in sales, and you work in media as well. So you've seen.
I have a lot of friends in sales, and I know a lot of them could probably benefit from that because they get very frustrated. And I don't know what to tell them. But if there's a place like that that could tell them exactly what to do, I think it's extremely beneficial.
I hope Brian ends up going down the hall. I know that people at WGN are listening. I hope he goes down the hall and walks into the sales department here in WGN. I'm just saying.
Just saying, but not
I'm just saying.
Yes.
But yeah, it's a legit thing. And I, you know, our team here, we talk about it, try to teach people how to do it. It's hard to do.
It's hard to do. But it can be taught, like you said.
It can be taught. So we're going to segue back to you, speaking of all kinds of things in the media world.
Yes. I
hear that there are some famous people
yes.
that are into tech, and I believe you're going to tell us all about it.
I am. So listen to this. So as we know, Jay-Z, of course, big rapper, and he's expecting twins. Let's not forget that. Of course, expecting twins with Beyonce. Well, for his next big move, he's going to launch a new investment firm that's named Arrive, that's geared specifically towards investing in startup companies. So that's like right up your alley. Investing in startup companies, the same thing as Jay-Z, right?
That's all we do. Jay-Z yeah. and I are basically like the same person. We're
yeah.
I invited him to become part of the Technorati.
Do you want to drop a bar or what?
I don't know.
No? Okay, so maybe like work on it, Scott. Okay, just work on it.
I have a lot of work to do.
So anyway, they say that Arrive was created to leverage, they say, our experience and resources in building brands, developing consumer-facing businesses, managing artists, and representing athletes. So there's a lot of crossover there in terms of investing and entertainment. Now, somebody else, I mean, everyone loves this guy, Tom Brady. He's starting a meal kit startup plan with Purple Carrot. So
he's so handsome.
I love him. Yes, but he is developing this line, TB12 performance meals that are meant to help active individuals cook many of the same delicious meals that he'll be eating. The thing is, I don't know if you're aware of how he eats, but it's insane. His strict diet. So he doesn't do any sugar, no flour, no types of additives, no nightshades. Do you even know what nightshades are?
No.
Okay, it's a particular kind of food. He doesn't do any of this stuff. And so if you want to eat like
that. Does that have bacon?
No, there's no bacon. These are plant-based.
Who would eat that?
So I would probably eat this.
Why would you?
We don't know each other that well. I'd probably eat this, actually.
Who would eat this?
But it's $78 a week. So it's pretty high up. But I guess if you want to potentially be a Super Bowl winning quarterback, this is what you have to do.
A multi-Super Bowl quarterback,
yes. And just the last thing I want to mention, there's a cool event happening this Saturday, the 18th, from 1 to 8, the Hackaday Unconference. So that's going to take place at the Pumping Station, like I say, in the 18th, so you can enjoy some inspiring talks, some food, some drinks, some hacks and projects, and what's an unconference? Well, it's an unstructured format for peer-to-peer learning, collaboration, creativity. And then I do not want to forget to mention your Technori event coming up.
Oh, that's so sweet of you.
I have to mention that. Yes, on the 28th.
It is March 28th. It's celebrating all female founders, which is awesome. We've got partners from Women Tech Founders, partners with Women 2.0, partners with Miss Tech. It's going to be fantabulous, is what I was going to say.
Yes.
Fantabulous event. We've got a keynote.
Fab.
Mm-hmm. Keynote Christy Ross from Tasty Trade and five incredible startup companies. I think you should go. Everyone just go to technori.events and get your tickets and use WGN as a promo code. Save yourself 25%. And we've got a new little trick that is all in there. You can get yourself Technori swag. You just make a donation, $5 or more. And, obviously my emphasis is on the more. But we'll send you.
What type of swag?
It's a beautiful T-shirt.
Yeah.
There's three colors you get to choose from: green, white, and gray. John is wearing the gray one right now.
He's a very handsome
devil. But I want to say this to people: it's not that crappy tech startup free T-shirt business that everyone's in. I have had multiple people get T-shirts either for free or that they bought from previous events and text me and be like, "Dude, great T-shirt."
Oh yeah.
Like it's high quality.
So it's
American Apparel. It's like a real deal. You can wash it. It's the real deal.
Way to go, Scott. Thanks.
We don't buy cheap shit here, man. That's how we roll.
That's the way to be. Good.
It's the way you have to be.
You do. You have to. But anyway, I hope you learned a little something today.
I hope everybody did.
Yes,
show me Shelley.
I hope you did. Yes.
Welcome. That was awesome.
Thank you.
So cool. We are back. I'm Scott Catoon. This is Technori Live on WGN. Sitting here, I watched the two gentlemen who come in and talk about desk view, and they actually put up the desk for us to have a view right here in the window. Hopefully the camera's got it. This is the coolest thing. I should say your names and stuff. I'm going to screw them all up just so you know, because, you know, I'm not real good like that. Jason Grachowski, right?
Yep. Nailed it.
Are you Polish too?
I am.
Yes.
No way.
Yeah. The ski kind of gives it away.
Got it, yeah.
I was thinking, as soon as I saw Jason, I knew he was Polish. No, I'm just kidding. I'm fellow Polish brethren. Or somewhere in there, I got some Polish. This is like Russian, Polish. Nobody really knows what the hell is going on that side of the family. And Michael Bolos, right?
Yeah.
Yes, two for two. The Greek, there we go. We do well with Greeks on this show.
Really?
Just so you know, we've had multiple. Yeah, we've got Aristotle Loomis. Yep. We've had George Boosis. There's a no bullshit there. And we got Patrick Tanous. We've done really well. So you've got, you know, you're going to have to keep this rolling.
All right. We'll do our best.
So I want to start off by just saying, as I mentioned before, how cool this is. And I'm going to let you explain to everybody what it is and how people can get a hold of them and how people can invest. You're doing crowdfunding right now, right?
Yep, Kickstarter.
You can Kickstarter and get in it. I just want to start this whole thing by telling people, like, what a problem this actually is solving and, like, how cool it is. I can't stand, and everyone who, well, I can stand, now I will be standing more, cannot tolerate sitting all day long. And many, many, many people are like this. They can't sit all day long. You guys might want to get a little closer. Can't sit all day long. You end up getting back issues and all this other stuff. So I am always looking for a stand sit desk. And you basically have two choices. Mm-hmm. You can spend an absolute fortune. I mean, I looked it up the other day. So we're moving into a new office. I looked it up the other day. It's like $700 for the cheapest, like, legit sit stand chair or table. It was like $3,000 if you want one that's not like a total piece of crap. And then the other option is like $199 and under, and you put your elbow on it, the thing, you're like face planting. That's going down.
Destroys your desk.
Oh, yeah. And you can only fit like your, if you have the plus model of your iPhone, that's essentially what fits on that table. So you guys have come up with something where if everyone who works in a city area has windows like this, and whether it's like a full floor to ceiling or this, you can just plug it to the window and you've got your desk ready to go.
Yep. Super easy to install.
That is awesome. Oh my God.
It's like two suction cups, literally, that are on the window, and then the desk is on this little table part. It looks really awesome.
So how do you guys come up with it? And then second, how does the suction cup thing work where all the other suction cup stuff in the movies don't work?
Yeah, absolutely. So I'll just kind of hone in the suction cup thing real quick. These are the same suction cups that are used to install commercial windows. So commercial grade suction cups, they hold, you know, combined forces, 220 pounds. But the desk view, we recommend 40 pounds, kind of like the weight load that for any kind of anything that you would really need to put on it. It's a minimal surface, so laptop, phone.
A bowl of pineapples.
Yeah, if you want to, I don't know if you saw the video, beer pong for some people, if you watch the video.
That's true. Oh, yeah, you guys have a great, that's another thing, the great video.
There's many uses for it.
Very cool. How did you solve it? Like, where did this come from?
This came about a couple years ago. I had switched offices, and so I was in a new office. And what happened was I had this L-shaped desk. And where my computer was sitting, it was facing the wall. And above it was these cabinets. So if I want to put a standing desk there, I'm just going to be banging the monitor against the top of the cabinets. And then if I wanted to go the other way, that's kind of where I had some chairs and, you know, people would come in and talk. So I couldn't block that off. So really there was no option for a standing desk for me. And I wanted to do a sit to stand or something like that. And then I looked and there was the window that was right next to me. So I had these nice floor to ceiling windows, you know, downtown high rise kind of office setting. And it was like, that's completely unused space. And so looked on the market, you know, I always try and see maybe someone's done this and nobody had done it. And it's like, all right, I'm going to build it for myself. And
you're pretty creative for a lawyer.
Oh, my God. It's.
I didn't mean that as a backhanded compliment. I'm just saying.
Very inventive.
I invented my first product when I was 10 years old. It sits in my family, in my dad's office, actually. It's really cute. It was a golf tee that was angled so that, you know, I was trying to learn golf at the time. Didn't go very well. And
thus the crooked tee.
Exactly. I thought that would solve my problems. But, you know, when you think of a golf club, it's angled. And I was like, why are tees straight? Like, the first thing that your golf club hits is that tee. Why wouldn't it hit the ball first? So, you know, I walked into our garage and I carved this little angled tee. And that was kind of the first invention I've done. And now I just keep kind of thinking things and building them.
Are you guys planning on, I mean, obviously you've got a product now.
Yeah.
Lots of companies. We just had guys on Tuesday who basically they built a needle for dentists. That was like a thing that would like actually be helpful and you wouldn't prick your finger and all kinds of stuff. And that was the first product and it's doing really well. And now they're building all kinds of other products. Do you see yourselves starting a company around this and
Absolutely.
It ends up being like multiple variations of creative stuff?
I came in probably about a year ago and really kind of saw this initial version of this industrial looking thing with suction cups and like plexiglass. And my background in commercial real estate and working with creative companies, obviously you talked to this point earlier, where the way people work is changing. They want to stand, they want to be mobile. So, and they want to have, you know, spontaneous meetings somewhere and having, you know, the options out there just are poor. Wi-Fi is amazing. Everyone has a laptop. Nobody really needs to be hardwired into a system.
How much does something like that weigh?
That, what are we doing?
A couple pounds.
So not, but it's like
it's negligible.
So you could literally just like
portable, take into a conference room. If you want a meeting with 10 people and you want to stand because people fall asleep sitting down or they get bored and it's just
or you want to lord texting. Over them.
Yeah, yeah.
Plus, you automatically get a view.
Yeah, exactly.
And you can change
you
can your
people
view.
Engaged.
Yeah, you can
you get people
it.
Standing. You get people engaged. The energy level is higher. I mean, sales, anything someone's doing, it's like, hey, stand up and take phone calls.
Yep.
Talk on the phone where you're trying to sell. So I just kind of saw the opportunity there, and then we partnered up with actually a design firm, Minimal, on the West Loop.
Who build awesome things, by the way.
They're incredible. Oh, they're like one of the pioneers of Kickstarter.
Yep.
So great group of guys, and we've just, you know, redesigning, and finally came out with the final prototype about a month and a half ago, and we're launching on Kickstarter on the 24th.
Do you know
April.
Roughly what the price points are going to be?
Yeah.
For that?
$165.
That's not bad at all.
Yeah. So your Veridesk and the Sitta stands are $300 to $500.
Oh, for sure.
And I was just talking to a CFO like 3 weeks ago for a company. He's like, how much are standing desks? $1,100? Yeah, we can't do that.
Yeah.
For 200 employees.
When are you going to have these things done? When can I buy? When can I get one is what I'm saying.
30 days for the campaign starting at April 24th. Yep. And then 2 to 3 months from that, we're going to be delivering.
Okay, cool. I'll be waiting because I'm telling you, I just bought one of those stupid desks that I'm going to be pissed at almost immediately. It was like 199 bucks, whatever. I don't know. Yeah. When the first complaints are like the caster wheels are like toys, that's not really a good start.
Your desk is caster wheels?
Well, yeah, I got to be mobile, man.
Absolutely so mobile, just walking around.
What? What kind of person keeps it? Listen, at my house, I rearrange my furniture like every 3 or 4 months because I get tired of looking at the same thing.
Well, this is perfect for you.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. I can walk around like, this is fantastic.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, we've been amazed. It's really cool to see what people do with it because, I mean, we've had a ton of people trying it. And some people use it for plants. They use it to display things, anything and everything.
I was going
to
ask, what is the other? So it's clearly, I mean, desk view is obviously an obvious one.
Shelf.
Can you do a shelf for sure. Like, are you going to be able to do support, I'm sure, technologically, figure out larger suction cups or whatever, do larger desks, bigger things, like
totally doable.
More pieces?
Yeah, entirely.
Yep. But I mean, it's we're turning windows essentially into walls.
Yeah.
It's this space that wasn't utilized before. And now,
I use them for whiteboarding, but that's now
we're in. Yeah, well, you can still do that. You can have your computer right there, too.
And I always have anxiety about punching holes in the wall or something. With this, you don't even have to worry about that type of thing.
You redo it when you leave.
Yeah.
So fun.
It's not good. This is a stupid question. Why can't you use suction cups on things other than just a window?
So, I mean, you can do it on any non-porous surface.
Yep.
The thing that, I mean, a suction force works off is that negative pressure.
Yep.
So if any air can seep
that
in.
That part I knew, of through, course.
If any air can seep in through other areas, it's going to seep in and kind of kill that negative pressure. So as long as you're talking kind of metal, polished marble, things like that, tile, works really great on that. The windows, it works perfectly. And so,
and how long can you just plug them and just leave them?
I mean, he's had bonsai trees growing in his apartment for like over a year.
Yeah,
and you never
all the temperature changes, everything. It's been holding perfectly.
So it's not like that deal in my car when it's cold and all of a sudden the little GPS thing comes falling out of my head. Like,
yeah,
that was one of the things. I mean, we've been through, God, probably 30 prototypes. And each time, you know, the first few prototypes, they were smaller suction cups and then got bigger and bigger. And one time, I was working on one in my office, and someone comes in, like, what's this? And they crank on it, and they just rip it down. I'm like, okay, need
get
to
out of
a
my
suction
office.
Cup. And so just kept scaling up until we got to these guys, which are just –
yeah, so I was
going
to say, in the video,
amazing.
These people – you can actually go to the video, and we'll tell you where to go. But, like, you can go to the video and watch it. These are legit. Like, I'm sitting here looking at this. It looks like something from NASA. This is awesome. I don't want to do that on camera. You never know.
Yeah.
It's very cool. So one of the things I kind of want to get to before we tell people where to go and get them and how to get involved in your campaign is talk a little bit about that iteration process. You mentioned it kind of briefly that the person went down and didn't work. You realized, like, this is something we need to solve. Neither of you are product engineers so far as your LinkedIn profile says. So how did you go through the iteration process of realizing here's a problem? You know, like, I'm just going to tell you objectively, it's a beautiful piece. It literally looks like what was that, the place that's always in the airplane malls?
Sky Mall?
Well, Sky Mole. Well, yeah, it does look like it'd be a Sky Mole thing. But I'm trying to think of whatever the name of the... It's like obsolete now. Anyway.
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's like they had all of the coolest... Like it was where Tempur-Pedic was the first bed that they had there. And like,
okay, yeah, yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah. Brookstone or something.
Brookstone, yes. Yeah. Brookstone. That looks like it was like tailor-made for like cool piece of tech meets a cool piece of like really refined furniture, metals. Like it just is a beautiful piece. How did you get from, I'm going to build something that's like tactical and I can use, to want to build something that's tactical and it also looks really cool and we could do it at a certain price point we can make? Like, how did two guys who are not in this space figure this out in a relatively quick amount of time?
So it started out, again, with kind of figuring out this functional idea. The idea that I needed something, a desk that I could adhere to the window. And then it went right to Amazon, basically. What's a suction cup that I can work with? How do I build something out of that? I've, you know, since I was young, since I developed that first product, I've been basically living in Home Depot. I think I can tell you where, you know, the nuts and the bolts are, you know, aisle 15A. and so then, you know, I went on Amazon, I found what I wanted, and then I went to Home Depot and I found the remaining parts and I just started working on it. And you just start building and you screw up a lot of times. As I said, I think, you know, there were 18 prototypes that no one ever saw. And there were more in my head that, you know, definitely never even made it to the prototyping stage. And you try and do it cheaply too. My big thing is be as lean as possible when you're a startup. I mean, we self-fund everything. And so those first ones, you know, you're just cannibalizing parts and reusing it and rebuilding it. Then you show people and they say, what about this? What about this? And, you know, take the criticism and work with it and use it to improve your product. And so finally got to the stage where I liked the product, where it had the hold strength, it had these suction cups, and then started handing them out, started giving them out to people. And this was that first kind of industrial design that we had. And I mean, people really loved it. They loved using it. And that's when we saw a lot of really crazy use cases of what people were doing with it and how they were using it for interior design and things like that, which was cool. And then Jason got us in touch with Minimal and they were like, we can take this to the next level. And yeah. I mean, whereas we were thinking more functional, like what is something that's kind of cool and works? And then, you know, we had metal fabricators throughout the city working to help us kind of build these designs and working on these prototypes. But they just came in, you know.
They showed us sexy.
They showed us sexy.
Yeah.
it was, and we worked. And I can't even, what was it? There was something like 15 concepts that we went through with them, too.
Yep. And you guys are funding this on your own?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was saying, like, it's a product. At some point, somebody's got to pay to start this thing off.
Yeah.
No,
well,
exactly.
Hopefully, you guys, when you start getting this production, you head over to M-Hub and talk to Bill Finnup, and he can set you up with a place to manufacture it at small batch.
Yeah, yeah, we're really excited about them.
When is the timeline for you? Once this Kickstarter's done, where can people go for right now, just for the Kickstarter? Where do people go to get involved?
ShopDeskView.com is our website, but we'll have our Kickstarter page up probably a day before Kickstarter goes live on the 24th.
It goes live on the 24th.
Yeah.
Okay. Very cool. Yep. At this point, I have to ask, so what is the next, like, tell us what the next thing is. I know that you can't think about that when you haven't even gotten this out, but the product is there. Like, there's no doubt that this is a legit product. So let's assume that you get the piece funded and you start moving. You're going to move units. There's no way you're not going to move units. If people see this, this is awesome. I will be buying one of them at the very minimum. What is the next stage for this business?
There, I mean, without giving away, I mean, there are concepts that are built off of this that we are going to keep kind of advancing the product, and there's going to be, you know, newer versions on the horizon.
When do you guys leave your jobs is what I'm asking. When is this full-time?
To be determined.
TBD. All right.
We'll see how everything goes.
Very cool. Well, thank you guys so much for taking the time and coming in here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
This is
great.
It. Very cool. And you guys are going to leave that desk for us, right?
Of course.
I'll tell everyone as they come in. It's fine. I'll set our drinks there. Very cool. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
Awesome. That was something awesome, to say the least.
I love it. They said, how old are you guys? Can I just add? You seem so young.
27.
I turned 32 very soon.
But that's great, though, right? I mean, you can have entrepreneurs of all ages, obviously.
I mean, I only, so, you know.
Yeah.
You guys look good. I think it's a great idea.
I know it is. It's an awesome idea. So good for you. It's really good.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, we are going to transition over to our friend Sean, who was made famous on the feed, and he's going to give us a little bit of a rundown on what we might have missed this week in Chicago Tech, what's trending, and what we should look forward to next week. Welcome to the party, Sean.
Yes. Hello, Technori family. It is I, Sean, from the feed. So my job here is to pull the lens back a little bit because we get so deep and ingrained in each of these companies. We have to look at the big picture every once in a while. And that's what I do every week on Monday. So here's the dish. This week, a big report came out from KPMG, which, of course, is one of the greatest accounting firms in our country. They do a tech and innovation report. The thing is, let me give you a little context here. Last year, they put Chicago 18th on the list of the best tech hubs in the country. 18. That's embarrassing.
That's fake news. That's fake news.
I would consider it fake news, too. I, at one point, considered to be an accountant. But
are you sure they're not the accounting firm that did the Oscars?
What do you mean?
Like, the huge flub with the, like, I think this is a crap.
They're probably behind this, yes. Yeah, behind but it. Here's the thing. I'll give
they
them.
They corrected it.
Tweeting
yes,
too much.
Things are a lot better this year around. Chicago got to number 6, but it was a 3-way tie between D.C. and Berlin. I didn't realize D.C. had a tech culture, I guess there must be considering governments there. But here's a couple of the pullaways. So, yeah, like I said, they moved up from 18th to 6th, and this is a big climb between the 2013 and 2015. And this list is based on the amount of investments, the amount of companies, the growth. So Chicago's looking good on that end. One other end Chicago's looking great is our universities. So holler out to our students and how they are blowing up on the startup scene. Another report came out talking about the university tech growth. Hundreds of startups are made. And the great news is that 81% of them are sticking around. They've managed to live. And that surprised me because we know how often in this world how a lot of startups fail. It's a sad, hard truth of this industry. So some good news. Illinois is looking better. The horizons are looking great. And that's what we talked about on the feed on Monday. And next week, I think we're going to touch on the almighty WikiLeaks. They put out a new report about the CIA and their level
of
surveillance.
Julian Assange,
a mysterious man.
He is a very mysterious
man. Of danger. But the way this relates to the startup world is that, you know, our smart technology, they're likely listening to you, more than likely. Like, for example, when I was in Dallas recently, I was opining about an espresso machine that I saw and liked. And lo and behold, a few days later, Amazon started advertising that espresso machine to me.
This happens all the time.
Yes.
Yes.
Our TVs are not our microwaves. I want to make that clear. That was fake news, the microwave thing.
Fake news.
But your TVs, your Alexas, they are listening to you, and they are looking for new ways to advertise to you.
Absolutely. Very cool. Well, thank you so much. I hope. When can people find the feed?
Every Monday afternoon by 4 o'clock. You can check Facebook and check technori.com, and you can see my pretty face there.
Very cool. Facebook.com/technori. Boom. Feed. Mm-hmm. Very cool. Thank you, Sean.
Thank you.
Guys, this is a great show again. We had some cool guests. We got some products. We got to see some really early stage startup companies that are doing cool stuff. The funny thing is I'd like to put Desk View and Victory Lap in the same place. So once they get this product moved,
they can start selling. That's a perfect
They can get
idea.
All the sales guys off their asses.
Yeah.
And then they can actually start selling some of the product.
Look at that. Yeah, that's a brilliant idea, actually. I hope that happens.
You know what would be interesting is, and this is the last second before we close out the show, I just had this kind of epiphany while we were listening to Sean talk about this in the schools and what we had today on the show. Think about all the startup companies that struggle with startups, mm-hmm. or startups with sales. Mm-hmm. And Victory Lap was talking about the fact that they literally have like a mock sales team when you go on the phone and fake. Why do we not have sales companies and groups getting together with the startup companies themselves and actually like having them do the sales calls for these companies to train? Because the startups can't afford the sales teams.
Because that's a huge part of the battle, obviously.
Yeah,
right?
You'd be able to teach them how to get from, you know, at least get from the phone call to a meeting to something. I think it'd be a good idea.
Yeah, and I was thinking, too, what do you think about, because you know I'm a big Shark Tank fan.
You are.
Yeah, I'm a huge Shark Tank fan. So,
I mean, Cuban and you are tweeting now. I mean,
we tweet back and forth. He follows me on Twitter, but that's a whole other topic. We could do a whole other day. But I could see something like the desk invention on that show, right?
Oh, for sure. I think it should be, and I think that they hopefully end up going and doing M-Hub with Bill Finnup, which just opened up, which is really cool because they actually small batch manufacture. So they could actually help them and other companies very similar lower the overall cost of manufacturing stuff.
Well, and that's good information, too, if anyone else out there kind of needs that next level, needs to know where to go. Like you said,
M-Hub. Check it out.
So that's
very
really
cool.
Learning lots today.
You are. You're contributing. Yeah. Thank you guys so much. This is awesome. Sean, thanks for the feed. Mm-hmm. Showbiz Shelley, welcome back to the show again.
Thanks, Scott.
Very cool. I hope we start seeing you a lot more often.
Me too.
It's going to be good. Very cool. You can stream this episode and more at technori.com. You can download the podcast at iTunes and stay connected by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Technori, or follow me at Katoon, or Showbiz Shelley at Showbiz Shelley.
On all social media, yes.
There you go. Boom, that's a wrap.